Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, I'm Juliette Burton, and welcome to my new show, Not So Lonely Planet. Maybe you've listened to the first two episodes and have an idea of what this podcast is all about, or maybe you're a maverick like me who just jumps right in mid-series because you like the number three. Whatever your reason for joining us. This show, as you know, is an exploration. We bounce around from person to person, enthusiast to enthusiast, nerd to nerd in each episode, like some sort of pinball. Where we'll end up is anybody's guess. So far in the series, we've met Rob, a London tour guide who enthused about the history of a particular pathway in the UK's capital. Rob then recommended we met Sue, who enthused in episode 2 to us about cheese and her incredible passion for the dairy product. She also showed me great patience with my incredible passion for cheese puns. Then Sue recommended we meet Adam Norden. Adam is a knife specialist. I ventured to a very mysterious building in London, which I was assured was a restaurant called Kitchen Table, and I was told I would meet Adam there.
I'm standing outside a very intimidating looking building. It's a beautiful building, and we're kind of near Goodge Street in London, so Warren Street, Goodge Street, quite central, quite north. The building itself is very black. It just, you know, like those slate things that you get in posh restaurants, like those slates that serve like cheese on them. Imagine that, but it's a building. And then it's got a very, it looks like a gold door. And it's got very little information on the outside. It says Kitchen Table. It does not look like my kitchen table. My kitchen table is a lot messier than this. I can't even knock. I can knock. Gold doors do knock.
So, we're about to dive into a mesmerising cave of wonders that is non-elitist fine dining.
Hi, are you Adam?
That would be me.
Adam, I'm Juliette.
Lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you so much for having me. Wow. And now we're inside. It's a corridor with... Is this art on the wall?
Yeah.
Is this art? That's that's my understanding of art. It's having to check in with whether I'm actually looking at art.
Fair enough.
It's very pretty. It's very bright.
Thank you. So the idea of this is essentially to
you're looking through a stained glass window into the kitchen. So all of these change seasonally. And the food here that James, I'm sure, will explain, changes daily. So it's the freshest ingredients. So we rotate these seasonally. So obviously each season it's the freshest produce for that particular season.
So all of these pieces of art on the walls are very brightly coloured, kind of modernist. They're not actually stained glass, but they're meant to look like stained glass.
Yeah, so the idea is it's also a bit of a juxtaposition. So you walk through, see these first. And the idea is you think that it's going to continue into the restaurant. And then when you go into the restaurant, it's a big kind of step back, breathe in. Oh, wow, this is very different. We weren't expecting that. So a lot of thought process has gone into just the walkthrough from the initial front door into the restaurant.
Brilliant. I'm looking forward to whatever is going to come up next then. Shall we go through?
Yeah, please do. It's just
through to the left. Oh, well, now we're in a very sexily lit room. I feel like it's the middle of the night, but actually it's the middle of the day. This is very, very beautiful. So is this the bar or the restaurant or?
Yeah, so this is the bar area. So when you come in as a guest, the idea is you come in, sit down, have a drink, your canapés and a couple of dishes, and then each individual group is slowly taken through into the restaurant itself, which is hidden just behind that leather curtain over there. It's very, very impressive what we've managed. Well, I say we. I did the artwork, what James has created, and I hope to have added a little bit of, you know, an artistic element to the walls.
This is intriguing because, we're not even into our conversation with you about why we're here yet, but are we going to go through the leather curtain? Is that where we're heading?
As you might be able to tell, I was just a little bit excited. The mystery and theatrics of the surroundings were already working their magic on me as Adam led me into the back room, which was the dining area.
So we're currently standing next to a very little petite bar that I'm very tempted to go and raid, but we're not doing that yet because it is the middle of the day. And then it's all very mysterious. This leather curtain at the end of this black kind of sofa and then a red sofa, lots of red and black, and these amazing lights. I think they're lights. Are they lights?
They are, yeah.
They look like balloons that have kind of slightly deformed, or like when you get mercury in those kind of lava lamps. Very proudly, there says a Michelin. So that means Michelin starred?
Two stars
this year. That's amazing. Congratulations to James, I suppose, and to yourself. Let's move through past the plates on the wall. Very, very beautiful plates. Oh, there's more alcohol. Good. That's another little bar at the end. Whiskey, specifically only whiskey?
Everything.
Hello, are you James?
Yes.
James, Juliet, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So, yeah, we are about to go through the leather curtain.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. Okay, James has just lifted the leather curtain and we are now in a very beautiful, very tiny restaurant. James, where's James gone? He's behind the other side of the leather curtain. James, is this your place?
Yes, kitchen table.
And how long have you been here for?
Since 2012.
And you've now got Michelin stars as well.
I have Michelin stars, yes. Or the team does, we do. Yeah, they're not just mine.
And can you explain briefly what Kitchen Table is?
So it's a counter dining experience. We're in front of you working. You're served a tasting menu only. Fine dining, I guess, we're classed as now, but sort of like using the best we can of the produce and etc. that we find in the UK.
You say fine dining, but it feels very relaxed and chilled here, which I'm very impressed by.
I think the stigma around like what fine dining was and sort of like what box it got put into is very much changing now. You know, it's a refinement of how we cook is why we give the name to the cuisine. You know, the atmosphere has very much changed now over the years that, like, you know, people can eat fine dining food but very much be relaxed in themselves.
So I could come in here in my trainers and my denim jacket and I wouldn't mind. I would be turned
that's
away.
That's all right, yeah. Yeah, just as long as, like, you know, Adam don't come in with his shorts and no top on.
I mean, I wouldn't mind
We've got to cut it somewhere. But yeah, I think going out to a restaurant in a suit now, if you don't need to, you look the odd one out now, where it used to be the other way. So, yeah, finally got enough money to buy a suit and I don't need one.
Good thing I didn't wear my ball gown that day then. The one day I didn't wear it.
The first thing that has hit me in here is that you are... All the seats are very much around the outside of the kitchen. So you
have the dining experience, but you have the theatrical experience of watching whatever is being made, which I would find delightful, because I wouldn't end up talking to whoever I was with. I would just be staring at the amazing chefs doing their things and wondering how on earth I could replicate it at home. And then I'd probably try later on and make a huge mess, and my flatmate would be angry with me.
With that image of me in a ball gown making a mess cooking in my flat, James, Adam and I sat down in the bar for a more relaxed chat, where I got to know the backstory behind the location, the alcohol-inspired artwork, and how social media actually began this beautiful friendship. Oh, and we learn why enthusiasts rule the world. And, of course, eventually, we learn about knives.
Adam, you were recommended by our episode 2 guest, Sue
Cloak.
She said that you are very interested in knives and art, and I'd love to know why it is that you know James as well. Why it is that you know Sue?
Yeah, so I worked with Sue for a short period, and I was brought in to help with the wine list and doing lots of tastings and training staff, etc. And then moving from there, obviously, unfortunately, we went through the pandemic.
I've heard of this thing.
Yeah. So we all managed to go through that, and obviously, coming from the hospitality industry, that dramatically not only affected myself, but you know, the whole industry. So I got to work doing an awful lot of painting, and essentially contacted James out of the blue and said, "I would like to do you a painting. No cost to you. There is no catch."
I'm glad you ended the sentence with a painting.
Yeah, well, never know.
There's some
behind,
chemistry going
behind
on.
Behind big black leather curtains. No, so I was doing a lot of artwork, and this particular restaurant always held something in my heart. So when my wife and I got engaged, this is where we had our engagement dinner. And I come from the hospitality and have worked in fine dining. I'd followed James for a long period of time and wanted to do a painting for a chef that, you know, that I have followed and, you know, genuinely care for and have taken such a large and vast interest in over the years. And just contacted you via Instagram, right?
Was it? Yep,
Instagram?
Yep.
I think it was.
Oh, classic, slid into the DMs.
Yeah, straight in.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be honest. I think, you know, when he first contacted me, I might have even just like read it and been like whatever. And then he contacted me again, and I think I was whatever again. Because, you know, in London, you're always on guard in London, right? And with everything that happens over like social media and like spam, and you know, we'll get you more followers and we can do this, and you're like, there's a guy offering you a free painting, and then you see his art and it looks pretty good, and you're like, nah, this is a con.
What does this guy want?
We both live in London and he's trying to do something for free, no strings attached. I'm like, it's just bullshit. And I'm like, so I ignored him, and then it got to the stage of like, right, this guy's not giving up, it's just easier to say yes, and sort of answered his he was like, this is the protocol, like answer these questions. I answered it, didn't think I'd ever see a painting, and then when the painting turned up, I think it was literally like 2 weeks later, I was like, right, you need to I want to buy one now, and I want one for my wife. And it was a very cool story of like how, you know, his ethos and thinking behind the painting, and then how he translated it. And we have them hanging up in our house, and it really is sort of like me and my wife as a painting and the thought process. So it's quite a personal painting.
Can you describe the paintings to us?
Yeah, mine's black, grey, and hers is like a rainbow.
Yeah. So that is something
without exaggerating. Yeah, and it was cool, and mine's exactly what I wanted it to be, and hers is exactly what he wanted it to be. And they look really cool together, sort of like a very yin-yang sort of situation. And that is very much how we've run our business, is sort of like a yin-yang couple of like, you know, my weaknesses is covered by her strengths and her weaknesses covered by my strengths.
I want to ask more about the tasting menu, but I want to come back to this wonderful chemistry between you two, because I love the fact that you've basically applied a dating ethos, Adam, to pursuing. Yeah, you met online.
Yeah.
You slid into his DMs. You played hard to get, James.
Yeah.
and thought it was too good to be true. No, I'm busy. I'm not interested. And then Adam, you've really managed to. You seem to be friends now. Are you friends?
Yeah, 100%.
Speak a lot.
Yeah, we've got a lot of mutual interests.
That would have been awkward if I said, "Are you friends?" and one of you said yes, and one of you said no.
Yeah, we could have got another show out of that.
So you are friends now, and you've done more commissioned artwork for James.
Yes. Yeah, so we've all of the paintings inside of the restaurant. So across, whether that's the entrance or within the restaurant, all of the artwork I have done.
Can you describe the one that's behind me right now?
Yeah. So each piece that you can see, I didn't essentially just go away and do. James and I had multiple meetings to discuss thought process, feeling. Obviously, a lot of my artwork is abstract, and I use an awful lot of colour, but there is always something behind the colour. So this particular piece behind you is a blend between the wonderful, well, two wonderful cocktails, the Negroni and the Old Fashioned. So we have the beautiful gold whiskey tones at the bottom moving through the different clouds of different reds from the Campari and whatnot in the, if I can get my words out, in the Negroni itself. So the idea is you are currently sat in the digestive area, and we have two digestive cocktails, so to speak, that are also represented in colour on the wall.
I really love that. I can actually see, now that you've explained that to me, yeah. I can see that in the painting.
So all of the colours are folded as well. So depending on where you stand and where you view it from, it looks like it's moving.
Yeah.
It's kind of sunsetish almost. Yeah. Like if the sun was setting on the Thames and you can kind of see it moving a little bit, the lights, like that's really, really beautiful. So,
and the painting gets even more justice when we actually set the restaurant properly. Mm. So like all the lights are up now. So when the guests arrive and all the lights, you know, you can see how many lights we have when they're all adjusted properly. His painting shines even more, like, you know.
I would love to know, Adam, how did you get into art? And James, I will ask you how you got into food as well. But before we do that, we need to know about knives.
Knives,
because
yes.
Sue told me that you were really into knives, and I was very intimidated, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to meet you or not.
No, absolutely. So it is a weird one when people say, "What do you do?" And say, "Well, make knives." I tend to get some odd looks. Although that being said, everyone does seem to always be intrigued. A long time ago, in a previous life, I was a chef. And I've always had a huge appreciation to chef knives because it's the tool that you use most. I was working somewhere, so for the life of me, can't remember exactly where it was, but I had a lot of holiday time accrued. So much to my wife's dismay, I decided to use my holiday and go and learn how to make knives in Derbyshire with a company called Block and Ben Edmonds.
So your wife was like, "Mate, we could spend some time together."
We could.
And you were like...
And I was like, "Well, but I could go learn how to make knives." And I think she knew how much passion was behind it. I'm sure you can see and hear it from me now. It's a huge thing for me that she wanted me to go and learn and do it, but also, you know, have a bit of peace and quiet in the home as well.
She said that I really love you. I really want you to go off and pursue your passion.
In fact,
if you can do it
another couple of weeks, I'll be absolutely fine. I went and did that, and then we've slowly, I've added to it and added to it. But what I didn't learn was the forging side. So I have joined a company called KWB, and they're 2 days a week, I do all of the forging. Well, I'm learning the forging still. So
forging, can you explain what forging is?
So we take the raw steel materials, essentially heat them up or blend them together, depending on what type of steel we're making, and then beat the absolute hell out of them with lots of big hammers and electrical hammers. And we have a generator out the back that powers one of our hammers that's probably the same size of half of this room. So very, very strong, lots of fire and sparks and whatnot. So yeah, that sounds
quite incredible.
Cool.
It's like a Game of Thrones thing.
Yeah, well,
or like the intro to Peaky Blinders. Yeah, like this guy in the background.
Yeah, so
or like in like Lord of the Rings. I'm just very excited now. I'm imagining
it's amazing. It's amazing. So we cool. The good thing is, you know, getting some of the stuff that we do on Instagram and whatnot. Like you don't have to try or put a filter on; it just comes out looking great. And I went with KWB because the guy behind it, Corbin, is essentially a mad scientist when it comes to knife making. To the point where a couple of weeks ago, I heard that all of the hammers going, and we hadn't discussed about making anything, and I wandered through into the forge. I waved at him, he took his ear defenders off, looked at me, I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, I'm just casually making a samurai sword." As you do. And previously to that, he was making Viking axes and whatnot. I don't do that side, but it is quite interesting. Every time I turn around the corner, he's off building or making or creating something that is absolutely bonkers.
Are these commissions or are they...
Yeah, yeah. So they...
I just thought he would just, you know, I'm a bit bored and thought I'd make a samurai sword.
No. So he definitely does make an awful lot of commissions. And I've always focused on the chef knife thing, but I'm learning to do other stuff. So, for example, we do cutthroat razors and, as you've just heard, axes and swords and whatnot.
Who needs cutthroat razors?
I don't know, but they're very pretty.
Okay.
They're very pretty.
In my head, I'm going down like Demon's Fleet Street, Demon Barber of kind of thing. But yeah.
Exactly.
Those are your clients.
So we also stabilise all of our own woods for the handles, which essentially means... we put them into a resin that goes into a vacuum. It then goes into a pressure chamber and is baked. So it makes not only the handle waterproof, but food safe as well. So we literally go from start to finish of the knife making, axe wielding process.
Now, I have never made a knife or an axe, wielded an axe, much to my detriment. I now really want to do both of those things. But it kind of, the way you're describing it, it sounds... kind of partially a bit like jewellery making and a partially a little bit like being a chef, making the implements to create more food.
Absolutely. So my side of it, so I work for KWE, but I'm also will be launching my own brand soon, and my particular brand will only deal with chef knives.
None of these samurai swords.
Well, I mean, you never know.
Just chef's Christmas presents.
Yeah. James will say, "Well, I'll have this year." but the idea is, I've always loved the idea that a chef knife designed by a chef surely would work better than someone that sat behind a computer screen.
You know what is needed.
Yeah. So, for example, we did the steak knives for kitchen table. I came with a prototype one, met with James. James and I sat down and we drew around it and redesigned it. And then we did prototype two. And then we had another discussion and decided we need to change a couple of things. And then we went to the final product and we made all of the 20 steak knives. There is a lovely kind of step-by-step process that has changed and evolved from where we started and where we finished. And I'm 100% adamant that there is no restaurant in the world that has knives like these.
Do you have any here that we can see?
I probably can show you prototype 2.
Yep.
Please do. So Adam's now going off to get knives. Again, still intimidated, even though I really like the guy. I'm still nervous about him bringing out the knives.
Whether he has a razor on him or not.
Yeah.
I made sure I told your staff that I wasn't stealing it.
Yeah.
Okay, so hang on. I'm now I'm going to try to describe this because I'm looking at it from the top and it actually looks itself like a piece of art. Like, that is... very, very beautiful. It's is it on a black kind of board? Can you describe it for us?
Adam,
you'll probably do it much better than me.
What we decided to do was we made a resin that utilizes all of the colorings from Kitchen Table's branding. So this at the back,
the actual handle itself.
Yeah. So this is all different types of blue and white and pearl.
Looks kind of marbleized effect almost. Is that?
Yeah. So we created that to represent Kitchen Table. And then we moved through to a lovely piece of ebony. And then the blade itself is a hand-forged carbon steel, so you can actually still see the hammer markings.
You actually can?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's like, it's history.
Absolutely.
Recent history. Oh, my face is very close to a knife, I just realised.
And the amazing thing about these particular knives... or carbon steel knives in general, is they all become unique. So carbon steel holds its edge a lot better than stainless steel and is preferred to be used by chefs, but it does have a downside, and that is that carbon steel rusts.
Right.
However, if it's cleaned, looked after, and dry, what will happen is when certain types of acidic foods touch the steel, what it does is it will slowly create something called a patina. So A patina.
Okay, this is going to be my pub quiz trivia.
There you go.
What is a patina?
So the patina is the reaction with the acid that essentially what it does is it creates the knife's own fingerprint across the blade. So over the next, well, the moment they're used, it will slowly, slowly change the colouring of the blade itself, and every single one will be totally unique. Just the same as on the steak knives, every single back where the blue and white is, every single one is different. So no two are the same.
So it's almost, I kind of love wrinkles on faces because each wrinkle tells a little story of where you've come from and what you've been through. It's like that with the
knife. You imagine that every customer that comes in and uses one has their own, obviously, hygienic fingerprint on it from a dish that they've had, and James changes his menu every day, so every single dish has a mark on the knife that is there. Obviously it's sterile, but it becomes its own fingerprint of its history within Kitchen Table.
I love that. So every lovely happy memory that everybody's come in with, each individual customer has had in this restaurant, gradually accumulates over time in this item that it passes it on.
Yeah,
it's like a vintage jewellery. There you go.
Or an aged wine.
I mean, you're saying all my favourite things now, so right, we're going to have aged wine in one of our episodes. I love that. I mean, I've never appreciated knives so much before. So is every knife here made by Adam, James?
The main course knife.
Right.
Yeah, so we have through 20 courses, we have a lot of different shape cutlery. But yeah, at the moment, it's just the main sort of like sharp meat cutting knife or protein cutting knife that you have with the main course. Yeah.
So is the knife the best out of all the implements around, like the fork, the spoon, the fish knife?
Well, I mean, I'm biased.
Yeah.
So, like I say, the Corbin and I, so it's this isn't my particular brand. It's the KWB that I'm working with Corbin. So it's not, I wouldn't like it to come across that I made them all. It was a lovely joint venture between Corbin and I.
And do your guests here know the passion with which these?
Yeah, so we're running into even the third night of using them tonight. So these literally arrived at the Saturday last week. And
these are at the beginning of that culmination
So Saturday they arrived, and Saturday night I used them. I actually even gave the guests them all myself because I didn't want anyone else to touch them because they became very precious. Because it wasn't that long, but it was long enough with like anything that you put this much detail and effort into it. And, you know, I said to him, as you do with Adam, like, do you know anyone that like makes knives, or you've got any recommendations? And next thing you know, he's making them. So it's a bit like, yeah, he doesn't know I'm asking him about sheds next week.
Was that?
Do you know anyone that makes a good shed?
Was that the reason, Adam? Was that like that you started learning how to make knives? Was because James needed
so
knives?
I was doing it quietly beforehand.
He was a bit like, I just happened to bring up knives, and he's like, well, I'm sort of working on a project. He's like, okay,
James, but the million-dollar question is, which do you prefer, his artwork or his knives?
Yeah, well, luckily for him, they're both good, right? They both do the job.
That's very diplomatic.
Yeah, but starting with the artwork, it was sort of when I worked with a designer on here, I had a booklet of things, of artwork that they'd sourced and gone off of in my head of what I wanted. And we would have brought it, we'd have never have met, we could have had eight different artists hanging in here, but I like the painting, but like, you know, where's the artist? Is he English? Where does he come from? What was his thing? Is he alive? Was it old work? Is it new work? And then I just kept thinking on it, and I was like, you know, oof. Like, no, you know, I just phoned him up. I was like, and he's like, what? I'm like, why not? And, you know, from the guy offering me a free painting to the business we've done together now, but like I said at the beginning, we've formed a friendship as well. We've got like a lot of mutual interests in different things. And
so, James, did you ever think that you were going to grow up to be somebody who owns their own restaurant?
No, not until I left school did I know I wanted to be a chef.
So why did you make that decision?
Because I wanted to be a policeman to start with. I think I'd watched Police Academy and Die Hard way too many times, so I very, very much saw myself as sort of like Bruce Willis, you know, a bit like the gun underneath. I'm going to take anyone down that messes with me. So I went to the police careers convention. They're like, yeah, you've watched too many movies, you can't join.
So you go from police to fine dining.
But it was sort of like, that's what I was left with. So I left it so late, people that couldn't really do anything or didn't want to do anything got put into a kitchen.
And it was back then, it was very stereotyped that that really did happen. And that's what happened to me. So I was put in the kitchen about 4 miles out of my village. And still to this day, the guy's name was Stephen Martha. And I'm like, you know, I think if I hadn't met him, if he hadn't been the chef that I got put with that day, I might not be a chef.
What was so special about him?
Just how passionate he was about food. And
enthusiasts, man. They rule
exactly.
the world.
Exactly. But it wasn't just what he was doing. It was he got me very quickly involved with, like, cookbooks. So, like, he had an office full of cookbooks. He was telling me about this chef called Rick Stein. Never heard of Rick Stein. I later ended up working for him for 3 years because of that as well.
For Rick Stein?
Yeah.
Like, I love him because he drinks whilst he's cooking.
Yeah.
That's my favourite thing about that. I mean, nothing ever gets made well if you're not a little bit drunk.
Yeah, right?
What was the man's name again?
Stephen Martha.
Stephen Martha's mm-hmm. enthusiasm infused you to then 100%. Change your life.
Yeah.
So, Adam, you were a chef, but now you're an artist and you make knives.
Mm.
How did you bridge that gap between chefing and that the new passions?
So I did my chefing qualification in Australia. Managed to work in some absolutely phenomenal places, learned an awful lot, still have a huge passion, still cook an awful lot for friends, family. And then from there, I went into the front of house world, where I just wanted to learn a little bit more of the hospitality industry. Travelled over to New Zealand, where I worked as a cellar hand at a winery. So I went from vine to bottle, and then went back to Australia. Spent some time there learning molecular mixology, and I did the same in New York. And then I went back to Australia and then back into the UK, where I have then been consulting for front of house, back of house operations. Pandemic hit, and then shebang, here we are, making artwork and knives. I've always done artwork, and I'm a huge, huge nerd. So I love doing comic book drawings. And in my house that we've just moved out, the previous house, I had an entire room that was just dedicated to comic books and nerdy stuff. I don't unfortunately have any more, but I still have a lot of the comic books and whatnot in the art studio, which is kind of nice.
I love that. That would have been so cool. Do you still do comic book drawings?
Yeah. The last time I did paintings of comic book stuff and whatnot was for a charity event in Bermondsey. And I essentially did a load of comic book drawings, paintings, etc. Put them into a pub called Simon the Tanner, and over the course of 2 or 3 weeks, anyone that came in could bid on them, and all of the money went to a charity, which was amazing.
You've been a nerd of all of these different skills, different...
Yeah, so diving. I did art for GCSE A-level, and then after leaving the UK to go overseas, where I did my diploma in culinary, I've always doodled, drawn, done stuff for friends, family, and yeah, just decided to see if anyone else was willing to possibly purchase some of my artwork. I put it online, and I've now got all artwork in a 2 Michelin star restaurants.
And the knives just happen to come on in.
Yes. The knives make me very happy.
Art clearly has a special place in your heart, but the knives, your enthusiasm is shining out of your eyes whenever you talk.
You have a grin
on your face.
Yeah, so I'll be launching some chef knives next year, which are really exciting.
It seems to me like no matter what you do, you seem to make a huge success of it. Because most people, like, I did a couple of doodles during the pandemic, and I'm not getting my artwork exhibited on the walls of a very beautiful restaurant.
So I don't know whether it's excelling. I think it's more right place, right time. It's, you know, there's a lot of luck to it as well. And as you know, you heard from James earlier, James saying that, you know, I nagged at him constantly, slid into his DMs, and then I continued politely badgering, which I wouldn't recommend you do to the listeners out there, but it managed to get me to having paintings in the restaurant.
I also wanted to pick up on the fact that you've mentioned that you're a nerd.
Yeah.
And that is kind of what we're doing, what we're celebrating here in this podcast. So is that a part of why you've turned successful with knives, with art, with, I mean, you mentioned wine and chefing and all these travel that you've done as well. How much has nerdery / passion, enthusiasm helped?
Oh, huge amount. So I have been, you know, very focused on comic books or, you know, anime or whatever it may be. I love the fact that it transports me to a total different plane of thought. So I can forget about what I'm doing. I focus on whether it's a story of, you know, Batman, Superman, or Iron Man, whatever it may be. It's an escape, but it's a really nice escape. It's a positive escape. But then when I then focus on what I'm actually doing, there's a huge break between the two. But yeah, that's... that. My wife doesn't seem to understand it, but to me, it's a really wonderful thing. I love the escapism, so to speak, if that is the right word.
I very much identify because I too deep dived into comic books hugely, and specifically got very into the rabbit warren of both Loki and also Agent Carter. So I now have bought myself an screen accurate hat, screen accurate vintage from the actual era.
Oh, amazing! Blue so you're even cosplaying now.
I am so cosplaying everything. So yes, I celebrate the escapism of the nerdery, but also to be able to turn that same passion towards something that you turn into a career, turn into connections like yourself with James. And now, hopefully, the passion that I have for this podcast is this connection.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you so much.
Well, I mean, I'd love to have my own costume, but I don't think my wife would let me because I wouldn't take off. If I had a Batman costume, it would be on every day.
You see, this is why I'm not married yet. This is.
I hope she's not going to listen to that bit.
So if anyone listening wanted to be a guest here, how would they go about finding out more?
So we release our bookings like 3 months at a day. So I've heard that, well, we're very lucky that we get booked up very quick. So you've got to be quite quick on that day.
Only 20 seats, right?
Yeah. So yeah, we're not breaking records with how many seats we have, but we're very fortunate that we get sold out pretty quick.
But everything in here has so much passion behind it. Everything clearly has a story. So if somebody wants to experience it, how would they go about that?
Yeah, so it's just book online now. Like with most things, everything's online. It's the easiest way.
Slide into your DMs?
Yeah, well, yeah, people do. I wouldn't slide into my DM. Yeah, me and DMs and getting back to you professionally is, you might be waiting even longer than it takes online.
What is the Instagram for, handle for Kitchen Table?
Kitchen Table One.
Very easy to remember then.
Yeah.
And how about Adams? What's your Instagram?
It's so, about 12.
Yeah, I have a few. So my artwork is AN Variants. And we have KWB Knives and Nord Knives. So Nord Knives is the stuff that I'm doing for the future, the new business. KWB is where you're going to see all of the crazy blacksmithing and forgery and Corbin making bonkers samurai swords and axes. And then AN Variants is all of the artwork.
We are looking for passionate people for our next episode. We want enthusiasts who can enthuse to me, because I'm now way more enthused about this particular restaurant as well as food in general. I'm also very enthused now about forging. I think I might want to go and get very hot next to some fire. What do you know, any other enthusiasts we can talk to? We're looking for more people in the world who can enthuse me about something.
I've been thinking about this, and I have a very good friend, Blake, and he also works in hospitality, but he works in a different form of hospitality. So he's in guest relations, but in a quite quirky way. And he's also one of the top players for the England indoor cricket team. So a lot of people discuss outdoor cricket, and you see that a lot on TV, but not the indoor side. And he's travelled around the world and has also captained England.
I've never heard of indoor cricket. Well, you can do indoor cricket?
Yes, there's even a World Cup, apparently.
How has this passed me by through all these years? I'm a woman of years old, and I've never heard of this.
So he's also just helped a team set up a place called... Well, two places in London called Sixes, which is a bar, but you can also play interactive indoor cricket in a batting cage inside the bar restaurant.
What? Wait, how is it interactive, firstly? And it's a bar and it's cricket? And this sounds incredible.
When you want a waiter, you just whack a ball at him.
And he has to catch it, hopefully, rather than just let it hit him in the head.
No, so obviously, I wouldn't want to ruin the surprise of speaking with Blake, but it's a little hole that fires a ball at you when you're in a cage that you then hit. And if you hit it against a wall, different areas of the wall will light up for different amounts of points and scoring and whatnot.
Oh, dear God. I've really enjoyed chatting to you guys sitting down. I have a feeling that in our next episode, I might have to do a lot of running around.
Yeah, I think you might be having a helmet and a cricket bat in hand.
Okay, I'm going to enjoy this nice, lovely, restful leather red sofa while I can. So we're gonna try and chat to Blake in our next episode.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for chatting to me, Adam, about all these amazing things, artwork, knives. I don't know what you're going to get into next, but I'm sure it's going to be very, very beautiful.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, sheds. Making sure that very artistic sheds. This is going to be a story behind every bit of wood.
I walk around the house, like, what do I need? Adam?
And James, thank you so much for chatting to me about
thank
this
you.
Beautiful,
nice
beautiful place.
You.
Thank you. And
cheers.
I can't wait to come back and celebrate maybe when we win a podcast award.
Yes.
We can celebrate by coming here and having our tasting menu. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Huge thanks to Adam and to James, and I look forward to celebrating at kitchen tables soon. You can help with that, by the way, listeners. If you're enjoying the podcast and would like me to go back to kitchen table with my producer to celebrate, then please do comment and share far and wide and nominate us for any award going. Podcast awards, Strictly Glitter Balls, Best in Show at Crufts, I'll take anything. In our next episode, we'll be speaking with Blake at indoor cricket bar and restaurant, Sixes. Best start doing my stretches now then, or maybe a little snooze first. This has been Not So Lonely Planet, a Hattrick production. Produced by Andy Goddard and John Wakefield. Executive producer is Claire Broughton, and I'm your presenter, Juliet Burton. I look forward very much to connecting and enthusing with you about a brand new topic next time.
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.